Hello and welcome to Spoilers, this first introduction to the play Jack Juggler by who knows. Following are some introductory notes and a plain text recording of the dialogue, a plain text being just our first cut edit of our full cast audio recording coming soon. So it has all the text, but no SFX, no Foley, and it's the edit we use to hunt out textual errors, retakes or cuts as needed. If you want to just enjoy our production, stop listening now and wait a week or two for its release. Or if you're listening in the future, look for the episodes future up the podcast list. Seriously, this is an exercise that some listeners won't enjoy. It will possibly spoil, clue is in the title, your enjoyment. If it ain't for you, move on. However, if you're still listening, or if you've already listened in the future to the future full cast production and you want to go back and hear a few notes about them, let's enter spoiler land.
Spoilers!
So, Jack Juggler was written by someone and printed sometime in the early 1560s. And performed by children somewhere, probably sometime before that. We're starting our progress through the play with the prologue. Now, the prologue to Jack Juggler is actually rather good, but it is cuttable for the modern stage. It tells the audience nothing that is required in the play itself, and it tells the audience that it is, in modern terms, a school play. And unless you are performing it as a school play, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be performed as such, possibly, it's a bit weird. However, it is rather fun, and it does tell the audience what the show is going to be like, and it wears the cloak of the schoolroom for comic effect, as a schoolmaster comes out before the audience and asks,
Interpone tuis interdam gaudia curis, wit posis animo quemvis suffre laborem.
And thankfully then asks,
Do any of you know what Latin is this?
Thankfully, because most people today would not know what the Latin meant. As someone with an E in GCSE French, this opening gambit is not unlike most of my memories of school language classes. Someone saying something I should know, followed by a sigh when no one in the class does.
It is best I speak English, or else within a while I may percase mine own self with my Latin beguile.
The master decides to speak in English, as obviously the class slash audience is not up to the task. Now, considering that this play is presumed to be a class entertainment, the audience probably were up to the task, the audience being either educated or children who were being educated. Hence it works as a good gag. Incidentally, it roughly translates as a little bit of fun makes the toil of life work more enjoyable or more bearable. The prologue then lays out at some length the proper breakdown of how one should spend their life, with noble examples of how all work and no play leave Jack Juggler a dull boy.
For, as meat and drink, natural rest and sleep, for the conservation and health of the body must needs be had. So, the mind and wits to keep pregnant, fresh, industrious, quick and lusty, honest mirth and pastime is requisite and necessary. For quod caret, alterna requie durabile non est. Nothing may endure, saith Ovid, without some rest.
All this philosophy, all these Latin quotes, sets up the conclusion that going to hear a play is a good thing.
Where to define and affirm he boldly on him took, that to hear interludes is pastime convenient, for all manner men, and a thing congruent. He reckoneth that, namely, as a very honest disport, and above all other things commendeth the old comedy, the hearing of which may do the mind comfort.
And playmaking and going within education was the exception that anti-theatrical writers at the time tended to give time to, as opposed to the general public, who were not to be trusted having fun. The play coming up, following the argument about the importance of rest and enjoyment, is not an extension of the student's schooling. The prologue clearly states it is purely for fun, following the example of Plautus.
Wherefore this maker delighteth passingly well to follow his arguments, and draw out the same, for to make at seasons convenient pastimes mirth and game. As now he hath done this matter, not worth an oyster shell, except per case it shall fortune to make you laugh well. And for that purpose only this maker did it right, taking the ground thereof out of Plautus' first comedy, and the first sentence of the same.
The Roman playwright Plautus, and of course you can have several options for your Roman writers who you might want to follow in dramatic style. So he chooses Plautus as opposed to Seneca, or in the comic mode, Terence. And Terence's less anarchic comic plays are, as an aside note, things I've never understood the love for in the early modern world, because they're tedious as f***. This play is written by a Plautus lover and is partly based on one of his plays, but I'm not going to go into that here, in fact, possibly not at all, just that the author likes Plautus as a model and as such proclaims this as a play where thought is not welcome. This is for fun.
That he that speaketh best is least thankworthy. Therefore, sith nothing but trifles may be had, you shall hear a thing that only shall make you merry and glad. And such a trifling matter, as when it shall be done, ye may report and say ye have heard nothing at all. Therefore I tell you all, before it be begun, that no man look to hear of matters substantial, nor matters of any gravity, either great or small.
So there. And then he goes off to fetch the players. Now, presumably the boys of the school, for an audience, or a variety of audiences. We don't know what the performance history for this may have been. It may have been performed for the class, for associates at the school, for the court, or for a paying audience, or all of the above, one after the other, or all at the same time. It has been linked to a number of possible schools with a history of public playing, but that doesn't matter too much for the modern ear. The schoolmaster closes with,
I will go show the players what your pleasure is, which, to wait upon you, I know be ready ere this. I will go send them hither into your presence, desiring that they may have quiet audience.
Or, in other words, shut up. And I should add, there is a question here as to a word, and if you are following along at home in one of the editions that are available, if not necessarily still in print, the two editions I've been working from are the Penguin for Tudor Comedies edition from, I think, the 70s off the top of my head, and from the Tudor Interlude series. In later editions of the original printing, the line is, I will go show the players, as we have recorded. But the earliest version has, I will go show the actors. And we may go back to using the word actors for the final cut. I don't know yet. It's a fun, characterful opening which tells the audience that the play isn't about anything. We can agree or disagree on that point later. The epilogue certainly will. It sets the play up as a school play, the dottery old schoolmaster trying to tell his audience to have fun, but he just can't help but expound at length on the detailed philosophy as to why having fun is okay. And then the play happens. But that's for the next episodes. If you have any thoughts about my brief breakdown, disagreements, or if I'm just factually in error, let me know. I might re-edit based on your thoughts, or not. And if you want to help choose future plays we work on, become a patron and vote. Go to patreon.com/beyondshakespeare and get involved in what we do. The full production will be coming soon. We're setting this prologue explicitly in a schoolroom, with the play itself set more naturalistically, and the next episode will cover the first big speech of the play of the title character, Jack. juggler, before we move on to his victim, Jenkin Caraway. So the next episode of Spoilers will cover lines 84 to 191 in the edition we're working from. But till then, here's the complete plain text of the prologue. Enjoy.
Inter pone tuis interdam gaudia curis, vit posis animo quemvis suffre laborem. Do any of you know what Latin is this? Or else would you have an expositorem to declare it in English per sensum planiorem? It is best I speak English, or else within a while I may percase mine own self with my Latin beguile. The two verses which I rehearsed before I find written in the book of Cato the Wise, among good precepts of living 1,000 more, which to follow there he doth all men advise, and they may be English briefly in this wise. Among thy careful business, use sometime mirth and joy, that no bodily work thy wits break or annoy. For the mind, saith he, in serious matters occupied, if it have not some quiet mirth and recreation interchangeably admixed, must needs be soon wearied. And, as who should say, try through continual operation of labour and business without relaxation. Therefore, intermix honest mirth in such wise that your strength may be refreshed and to labours suffice. For, as meat and drink, natural rest and sleep, for the conservation and health of the body must needs be had. So, the mind and wits to keep pregnant, fresh, industrious, quick and lusty, honest mirth and pastime is requisite and necessary. For quod caret, alterna requie durabile non est. Nothing may endure, saith Ovid, without some rest. Example proof hereof in earth is well found, manifest, open, and very evident. For except the husbandman suffer his ground sometimes to rest, it will bear no fruit verament. Therefore they let the field lie every second year to the end that after rest it may the better corn bear. Thus then, as I have said, it is a thing natural and naturally belonging to all living creatures and unto man especially above others all, to have at times convenient pastance, mirth and pleasures, so they be joined with honesty and kept within due measures, and the same well allowed not only the said Cato, but also the philosophers, Plutarch, Socrates, and Plato, and Cicero Tullius, a man sapient and wise, willeth the same in that his first book which he wrote and entituled of an honest man's office. Whoso is disposed thereupon to look, where to define and affirm he boldly on him took, that to hear interludes is pastime convenient for all manner men and a thing congruent. He reckoneth that, namely, as a very honest disport, and above all other things commendeth the old comedy, the hearing of which may do the mind comfort. For they be replenished with precepts of philosophy. They contain much wisdom, and teach prudent policy. And though they be all writers of matters of none importance, yet they show great wit and much pretty conveyance. and in this manner of making Plautus did excel, as recordeth the same Tullius, commending him by name. Wherefore this maker delighteth passingly well to follow his arguments, and draw out the same, for to make at seasons convenient pastimes mirth and game. As now he hath done this matter, not worth an oyster shell, except per case it shall fortune to make you laugh well. And for that purpose only this maker did it right, taking the ground thereof out of Plautus' first comedy, and the first sentence of the same. For higher things indite in no wise he would, for yet the time is so queasy, that he that speaketh best is least thankworthy. Therefore, sith nothing but trifles may be had, you shall hear a thing that only shall make you merry and glad. And such a trifling matter, as when it shall be done, ye may report and say ye have heard nothing at all. Therefore I tell you all, before it be begun, that no man look to hear of matters substantial, nor matters of any gravity, either great or small. For this maker showed us that such manner things do never well beseem little boys' handlings. Wherefore, if ye will not sourly your brows bend at such a fantastical conceit as this, but can be content to hear and see the end, I will go show the players what your pleasure is, which, to wait upon you, I know be ready ere this. I will go send them hither into your presence, desiring that they may have quiet audience. I will go send them hither into your presence, desiring that they may have quiet audience.
The prologue was performed by Rob Myson. And I've been your host, Robert Crichton.